All right, welcome to New Dimension Comics Presents the Toddcast, everybody. I am John, your normal host. Tim is going to be a little late tonight, but we are welcome you all to episode 134, where we are joined by the creative team for Image Comics Stray Dogs, Tony Fleeks and Trish Frostner. Did I say that right?
Forstner.
Ah, it's close. I switched the R and the O. My bad.
Somebody in a review last night said Tony Floss, so I think you got closer.
Close enough.
It's totally like cool. Like the floss, right? Just as long as you don't like do the that kind of like the Fortnite floss. That's just awkward. You
never know what I might do.
So that's true. That's true. So, so Tony, you wrote the book and you've done work with My Little Pony. You did Time Shopper for Action Lab. You did actually a lot of Action Lab stuff. I was really impressed because I'm pretty sure the last New York Comic Con I was at, I was working the Action Lab booth and handing out flyers for that book to come out.
Yeah, that book actually never came out from Action Lab. It sort of got COVID-ed.
Yeah.
and so it didn't come out. They gave us the rights back and we're gonna kickstart it right at the end of Stray Dogs, basically. So but
cool.
It's done. You awesome. Were promoting it when it was done. It's just sort of been stuck in limbo.
Right. And then you worked on my buddy Sean Gabbern's book, Black Betty. You did a couple covers for that.
Yeah.
You did some Miraculous book, Dollface, Zombie Tramp. You did Slayer, Heavy Metal Santa, which I love. You did some other stuff too. Like you've done Garfield Grumpy Cat. You've done Rainbow Bright, which I actually bought because I'm an 80s kid.
Sure.
me too.
Yeah, you did Rick and Morty.
Just finished this week.
Yeah, that's some awesome stuff. So yeah,
Star Wars Adventures.
Oh yeah, I forgot that on there. That was on my list too.
My Little Pony Transformers.
Oh yeah, that had to be a fun one to work on because that's like the most ridiculous, like two things together.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's sweet.
It's like when you got the Happy Meal toys, you know, like the kids' Happy Meal toys. You could choose they used to do boy toy and girl toy, but now it's like everybody toy. And,
right.
You know, yeah. Transformers and My Little Pony were in the same thing. Or, you know, it was like Barbie and, I don't know, Transformers or a robot or cars. Hot Wheels, yeah. Hot Wheels. That was my jam.
Oh, man. I did love me some Hot Wheels, I will tell you that.
Yeah. Trish worked on My Little Pony Transformers, too.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I'm pretty sure I saw that somewhere.
Yeah, my issue comes out this month. Sometime.
Awesome. So, Trish, you've also worked on mostly just My Little Pony stuff, right?
Yep, outside My Little Pony. I've done some covers for other folk for random stuff. And now... My Little Pony Transformers too.
That's awesome.
Super and of course, cool. Stray Dogs all along the way.
That's awesome. I'm absolutely loving the cover work on some of these, especially like the Silence of the Lambs cover for number one was really, really awesome. Now, when you guys decided to, I know we're kind of skipping ahead, but when you guys decided to do those covers like that, was that something that you just thought of as you were pitching the book as the like Lady and the Tramp, because it's always pitched as Lady and the Tramp meets Silence of the Lambs. So was that just like, because it was pitched like that, that was just a cover you guys thought of doing? Or was that always like a joke cover, like an inner joke between the two of you when you were making it?
Well, I think that it was part of, it was like the first thing that you said. Basically, it came about, we weren't even going to do these horror homage things, right?
Yeah.
Right. Image kind of was like, maybe we should do these so people know it's not for kids. And so we were like, okay, I guess we'll just do these. That's fine.
Right.
And so, of course, we started doing them and people love them. Oh, my gosh. That right. Silence of the Lambs one, so good. And they're very collaborative. I do pencils on them and Tony does everything else and nice. They're great and they come out awesome and they look like the real deal. I want a whole like wall of actual posters.
Yeah, I want it to look like a video store, you know, where it looks like a shelf in Blockbuster.
The only thing that could have made them a little bit better is if they had like little creases on them from like being used too much.
Yeah, or the stickers that say like please rewind and horror and stuff.
Oh, yeah. That'd be awesome. So, well, while we're waiting for Tim, I'm just going to just do my normal NDC announcements of events. So if you guys are in the PA area and you want to check some of these out. So starting this Saturday at our Elwood City VFW building, we're going to open it up from 12 to 5 every Saturday, except the one for Three Rivers Comic Con for 25 cents a piece. We're going to have a bunch of mostly indie and like some not as great condition books. But if you're into like super weird indie stuff or just mature-ish title stuff, totally come out. It's a huge, huge building, all 25 cents. I'm pretty sure there's a long and short box deal, but I can't remember what it is. This Saturday, May 8th, I'm going to be at the Sarah Hines house doing Kids Comic-Con kickoff weekend with them. So it's a bunch of kid-related activities at the Sarah Hines house, which is a kids learning center, almost like a, like think like Boys and Girls Club, but like more privately owned. We're going to be there giving out free comics with the Toonzeum from 3:30 to 5:30. Kids can do sketching. They can do, they're going to be able to do green screen action figure photo stuff. We have the 501st coming. It's going to be a fun time. Then May 22nd, 23rd, we have our Three Rivers Comic Con Light at the waterfront, 2 days outside Comic-Con. Not quite as big as we hoped it would be, but it, or what it would be if it was inside, but it's still going to be about 100 vendors and artists together hanging out. We have a bunch of tents. A lot of people are bringing their own. We're taking over part of a parking lot. We have a giant blow up Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. It's going to be awesome.
What's the weather like there? Is it hot? It's hot here.
It is, I will say mediocre, because it goes from like days where it's 80 to today it was like 59, mm-hmm. and then same anywhere here in between, and then at night it's like 40, and then it'll go back up to 60, and it's just really, really awkward, and just kind of sucks.
It's a fun time of year where it's, you know, herky jerky. We you know, go to bed and it's like 60 degrees out. You wake up, it's 35, and you're
right,
like, why is this happening?
And you mostly just pray it doesn't rain.
Yeah, that's it.
Right. And then June 5th, we have our Million Comic Sale, which is at our Elwood City locations, plural. So we have our main building, which houses our basement, which has, the basement alone is 500,000 sorted dollar books. Then the upstairs is another probably 300,000. We'll have stuff in the old store, and then we'll have quarter books at the VFW. So come up for that. That'll be 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tons of craziness all over the place. And you can still get early bird for the basement private shopping to that, which is a lot of fun. So
I know what Jim Rugg's doing.
Yeah, I saw him up there last weekend for half price sale. He was at our Elwood store. I see Jim a lot up there. So that guy him likes to dig in the crates. What's that?
That guy likes to dig in the crates.
Oh, dude. You he one time we worked out a deal for some books of his to let him basically into like a private space where we had a mountain of like that indie style books that we just were like, yeah, dude, whatever, just don't fall off the mountain. So like him and three of his buddies came in, and they were like, it was like mountain climbing. Like, I swear they had like the ropes and shit, and they're just like climbing up boxes. But Jim's a great guy. Him and Ed and Tom, who all do cartoonist kayfabe, all shop local. They support a lot of the stores, but we do see them quite a bit, and they're great people. So, all right. So, wow. Surprised Tim's not here yet. So that wraps up my events. So now I guess we can do origin stories. So this will be fun. Who wants to go first?
Trish, go first.
Trish.
Yeah, I go first. It's origin shorter
story.
So, don't worry, it's very short.
So your origin story is just kind of like how you got into comics, maybe where you grew up, where you are now, how you got to where you are now in the business, things like that. And you can take as long or as little time as you want.
Well, my story isn't very long, only because I'm a relative newcomer to all of this. So, you know, my story, as far as being in the industry, starts around, I guess, 2017, 2016. You know, I did my first covers for My Little Pony. And it just took off from there. They tried me out on some interiors slowly. I did a 4-pager, then a 12-pager for Free Comic Book Day that got COVIDed. Yes, COVID.
Pandemic'd. It got pandemic. Yeah,
it got nuked by the pandemic. And
it so disinfected.
We didn't get a real comic book day, Free Comic Book Day that year. And so that I don't even know where that I have my copies, but I don't know where, you know, I don't know if these other what the comic stores actually did with them or if they even got them.
We got them. We did.
Yeah. Well, I did a 12 pager for that. And then there was a story of Tony's in the back. And and then after that, I got an issue 93 of My Little Pony. It was so cute. Very heartfelt story. One that I like to draw a lot of expressions and stuff. I've been drawing my whole life. Illustrations are my jam. I've, you know, been slowly working on stuff. I have a lot of passion projects, stuffed animal development, you know, merchandise stuff with like my art on it. It's really cool. I like to source that sort of thing and figure out how it works. And then, you know, Stray Dogs came along in 2018. Tony and I were talking across the BronyCon.
You're yelling at each other across the sea of bronies.
Yeah, across the bronies.
Was that the last one they were right?
2019 was the last one.
Yeah, okay.
And it was bananas.
Yeah.
But we chatted up at 2018 BronyCon, and it just went from there. I was in from go, and here I am.
That's awesome. All right. And that's awesome. And you're in the, you said the Baltimore area, right?
Yes. So
what's your local shop down there?
Well, I go to a couple. Collector's Corner is okay. Real local, and Third Eye Comics in Annapolis. I'll drive down to them. They have a bunch of locations now.
Yeah.
They're even opening a new one, I think. But
they,
yeah.
They just opened one, I think, in Virginia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the Annapolis store has got all my people. Trish, shout out to all the Trishes. There's like two of them there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's wonderful when I go there. They're very welcoming. And, you know, we had a big little to-do when I showed up with my first issue. It was really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they made a big deal for you. They rolled out the red carpet.
Yeah, I signed some books. I felt like a celebrity for 10 minutes. And then I went back outside and the world was there. And I was like, oh.
That's awesome. Yeah, you're all those guys here. Are great. Like, I've talked to Steve a bunch from Third Eye, and I really like He's their good, shops dude. A lot. Yeah. So, all right, Tony, your turn.
So I got how I got into comics.
So like, how you got into comics? What got you into, if you want to, and then like, just like some of the stuff you worked on and how you got to where you are now. It's like, you know, think of a superhero origin story. Yeah, yeah.
This is your life.
This is your life in 5 minutes. No,
we can do it shorter than that. I started reading comics when I was a kid. And I started like collecting comics. Like I would always buy comics when I was around them, you know, like when I would have lawn mowing money and I'd be close to like a grocery store with a spinner rack. But I started really collecting them every week in like 1991. Jim Lee X-Men number 3, Chris Claremont's last one was the first one that I bought and was just like, oh, I got to get this all the time. And so I started buying regularly then. And then pretty much from then until now, I've been like a Wednesday, you know, like I buy every week, except for a couple years in college, like everybody. And I always wanted to either make comics or make cartoons, like work in animation. And so I went to college for computer animation, and there I figured out, hey, Tim's here. Tim's connected.
Whoa. Hi, Tim.
I'm so sorry.
We're in the middle of Tony's origin story. You didn't miss
too much. Trish's origin.
Yeah.
Don't worry, you didn't miss much.
I'll go back and watch it.
That's the beauty of digital, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I went to art school for animation, and I figured out there that I didn't necessarily want to do that part of it. Like, I knew I wanted to draw, but I didn't, like, it was a lot more production in animation than, like, in comics, it's a lot more like getting your hands dirty and doing everything, you know. Like, I've worked in animation recently, and it's like the stuff that I would be doing would be like, you know, this character has a cane or a plunger in this episode, so we need you to design what the cane looks like, you know. And in comics, it's a lot more like, think up the whole story, or draw this whole story, or this whole issue, or this whole story arc, or, you know. So I was more attached to that idea, so I sort of pointed my sights towards that. And then I went and worked as a graphic designer for about 6 years, and while I was doing that, I started making my own comics, and then I found publishers to publish my own comics. And my first comic came out and sold like 700 copies through Diamond, and I thought that was like a huge success.
You did it!
Yeah.
It's more than I have sold through Diamond. So
I found out recently that one shop that I knew ordered like 300 of them. So I was like, you mean I only sold 400 copies through Diamond? Like, 400 unaware people bought them. But
which book was that?
It was called In My Lifetime. It's an autobiographical book that I did in like 2006. One of those black and white books that would have been in that mountain that Jim Rugg was climbing around on.
Probably.
But yeah, so I did that and I quit my real job and was just like, well, I make comics now. And then I struggled for about 6 years after that, just sort of trying to pay rent and figure out how to keep regular work coming. And during that time, I would do like coloring jobs, lettering jobs, anthologies and one issues, all like one-offs. And I got a job as an art director for a comics company that I was just like putting together books for them. And then I met the editor at IDW who edited Ninja Turtles, and I sent him samples for that. And my stuff is cartoony. So he was like, oh, Ninja Turtles doesn't want to do cartoony stuff right now. And I was like, it's a cartoon.
Like, but they're gritty. It's gritty.
Yeah, they were doing the real style stuff. A week later, they emailed me back and he was like, you know what is cartoony that we're about to do is My Little Pony. Would you be interested in that? And he said it like I wouldn't be interested in that. And I was just like, yeah, that sounds great. I'll do that. And that was in 2012. And basically from then until now, so for the past 8 years or so, I've just been drawing My Little Pony almost full time. And in there, I've done different stuff, you know, like all the stuff that you mentioned in the intro, and Star Wars Adventures, and sort of stuff that sort of grew out of just knowing people at IDW and working over there. I got to know those people pretty well. So like, if they were doing something, I was like, they got the Back to the Future license and I was like, oh, you got to let me draw something. And they were like, yeah, sure. And then they gave me the assignment. It was like old Biff from Back to the Future 2. And I was like, that's not what I meant. I meant like something with the DeLorean or, but yeah, so I worked there until right now. I'm working on My Little Pony Transformers 2 right now. And then in the meantime, I realized that sort of like my first step was like get work in order to survive. And then I needed to sort of move on to the next thing. And the next thing is making your own stuff and having your own properties that will sort of work for you while you're not doing the work, you know, like, like with Stray Dogs and with my other creator owned stuff, you know, like it'll be out there earning for me. I put it out on the strip and it earns for me. And then I can continue to work and still have, you know, stuff out there that's doing its own thing. Getting to express myself more fully too, not just doing licensed stuff.
That's awesome.
When you were doing My Little Ponies, do you get like at cons and stuff, do you get like a lot of people that are like real heavy into like the brony scene? Like, is that like a real thing that happened?
Oh,
like,
yes.
Okay. They have full on, like, that's how I met Trish, was at a brony convention, because she was like doing brony artwork. And yeah, I'd done tons of just straight brony cons. And it's great, especially working on like doing an IDW book. When you go to a regular Comic-Con, it's cool because like people will bring their kids over and stuff, and you're like a oasis for somebody where it's just like all superheroes or stuff that maybe their kids aren't into. I mean, all kids are into superheroes now, but at the time. But then at a BronyCon, you're not just the oasis, you're like the thing, you know, like it's like being Jim Lee at a comic convention. Like everybody wants the thing that you're selling.
They're like, oh my God, Tony's here.
Yeah,
they seem like they're really passionate fans.
Yeah, super. Like, I always describe it as I've loved Star Wars my whole life. And I know, like, the names of you know, imperial generals that don't matter, but any, like, your least brony, your smallest brony knows more about My Little Pony than I know about Star Wars any day of the week. Like, they just, they're obsessive. They love it. They, like, they love it with their whole hearts. It's wild.
That's awesome.
Have you gotten to work with Jeremy Whitley a lot?
Yeah. Yeah, I got Jeremy Whitley. I mean, I don't know if I necessarily got him that job, but I liked his book, Princeless. And I met him at a convention and I said, oh, I like Princeless. And he was like, oh, I like My Little Pony. So I sent an email to my, to
yeah, my editor. He wrote this. He wrote this. Trish, the cover art. Yeah.
But yeah, I would say the most of my pony stuff has been with Jeremy ever since he started working there, because we get along. We work well together.
It's cool. I've known him through the Action Lab guys, and that's why I was asking. So
yeah.
And then obviously you did a lot of Action Lab covers and stuff. So I didn't know which came first, the Action Lab stuff or the My Little Pony stuff.
I think Princeless is how I ended up doing that stuff, because the first one I did was a Princeless cover.
Cool.
Or like a store variant.
That's awesome. All right. So how did, so we know Stray Dogs was pitched at a BronyCon. So now we're going to talk about, they'll let you guys talk about Stray Dogs. I will only tell you that I've only read issue one, but that's also because I read like 4 inches worth of comics every week.
you have to do your homework.
I'm almost caught up. Finally, I took today and I read like, I had like 8 issues of like Captain Marvel I had to read and a bunch of other things.
Finished all three, and I'm just kind of like, why do you hate dogs so much, man? Do you know they're great?
And if I actually would read that in my house, like my dogs would be like, am I gonna be homeless? Like, am I gonna be a stray? I'm like, no, baby, you're good. I have 2 Boston Terriers, so.
Aww.
Yeah. I've got a bull terrier right now that's bothering me. That if you see me moving my arm, it's because he won't leave me alone.
No, I'm actually surprised mine aren't up here, but
I have an Alaskan Malamute who's in the living room lounging.
Oh my god, that's gotta be cute.
Yeah. I'm just drinking water.
Bruh.
You probably heard it.
Can't hear it.
The world dog people. We love the puppers.
Right?
Yeah. We love the puppers. Right. They're all good. Good boys.
My guy goes to drink water. You'll hear it. He's got a very loud drink. People never know what it is. They're just like, is somebody walking through a swamp? What's happening?
If you hear Eve, she sounds like a bear. So, you know, if you hear her, she just will roar.
I was at one of our stores yesterday where an assistant manager just got a pug. He's like 3 weeks old, and she brought him in for me to see him. And I was like, oh my God, you're so tiny. Like, it was super, super cute. But anyway, I'll let Tim kind of talk about the book. I'll let Tim talk a little bit about this book before you guys do, since he can kind of catch up. And he got you guys to come in and hang out. And I'm really glad he did, because I like to meet.
Well, I read that first issue because my buddy Mike was like, this book's awesome. You have to read it. And I'm like, okay. I mean, like, I usually don't say no to anything. I'll try any book. And I read it and I was like, why do I need this book so much? Like, I love dogs, but I'm like, this idea is so amazing. And for anybody that hasn't read it yet, the setup, as far as like how I understand it, is it's a guy who is a serial killer, and he keeps the people's dogs as like kind of trophies. And the artwork is crazy, because it kind of gets you into a comfort zone. You're in this like Disney feel, right? And you're just like, this is great, and there's rainbows and there's all this, and then it's like bam, and you're just like, what did I just read?
Like, when the hook hit you like an anvil over the head.
It really did. It really did. So, and it's just weird, because like, I love dogs so much, but I'm fascinated by like the idea of the book. And then I'm like reading, you know, because I read the first 3 issues, and I'm looking at the people at the end that have talked about the book, and you're getting like high praise from guys like Brian Michael Bendis and Scott Snyder. And I think it's well deserved. But
thank you.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk a little bit more about the book, because I know there's still 2 more issues out. Yeah.
So, like, how you pitched it is how I pitched it to Trish. Well, I mean, the way I pitched it to Trish was I told her basically the story of the first issue, where I said, you know, there's this dog, and she shows up at this house, and she's not sure how she got there, but there's all these other dogs there. And it seems like this idyllic sort of, like, Oliver and Company minus the robberies, you know, just like a Rover Dangerfield type. I wanted it to feel like all these 80s and 90s animated dog movies, you know, where it's just like a bunch of dogs and they have an adventure, or like a Homeward Bound, or a, you know, like a Babe sort of vibe where it's animals who talk to each other, but they don't talk to people.
Yeah.
And this dog doesn't know what she's doing there, but she feels something isn't right. Like she feels sort of uneasy and she's not comfortable. And then, you know, she goes and lays down and the master of the house comes and finds her and tries to make her feel better. And he's like, hey, are you, you know, you're shivering. Are you cold? And he puts this scarf on her. And when she smells the scarf, she has this flashback to someone strangling her previous owner with that scarf. Yeah. And then she goes and tells the other dogs, like, your master killed my lady and he brought me here. And all the other dogs are like, what? That doesn't make any sense. None of them have great long-term memories. And so it's just a book about, is that what happened? Can she convince these other dogs that's what happened? Did it happen to the other dogs? Like, are they all trophies? And so it sort of becomes this mystery, but with these characters who have no control over their surroundings, you know, like they don't have hands, they can't open doors.
Yeah.
And so it just sort of like seemed like a great, you know, like murder mystery sort of horror story that you could tell, because you always want your characters in horror stories to be relatable and you want to feel scared for them and you want to feel like attached to them. And you also, you want them to be as helpless as possible because that's how you get invested. You're just like, well, how are they going to get out of this? You know? And I thought with this story, like there's no possible way they could get out of this. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I really dug that idea. Like a Law and Order episode with dogs. Like,
yeah.
And the whole time I'm reading it and I'm like, I can't remember the big brown dog's name, but I'm getting some vibes from him. Like maybe he's going to be kind of like a tattletale or something. Cause he seems like he's the one that's very adamant, every time that like, this isn't what you say, even as more people are starting to kind of remember things.
Yeah. He's the old dog. Like you can't teach an old dog new tricks, you know, very stubborn, stuck in his ways, sort of hound dog type.
And the idea of the dog, like when, you know, when she sniffs the scarf, it's neat because it's like, you know, dogs in their memory, but it's also like a trauma, you know, like something happened. So, and you kind of forget that. And so it plays on both of those. And I thought that was really interesting. So.
Yeah. It's been a lot of, I don't want to say fun because it's like, it's such serious subject matter, but like telling the story around that has been a lot of fun just because there's so much you can sort of that you can do with dogs that you can't do with people, you know, like I've said before, like recently, like if this was a horror story just about a house with 11 forgetful people in it, you know, like I don't think people would care nearly as much just because, you know, you're just like, well, why don't they remember? Are they all amnesiacs? They all have head trauma. And then like, but where, if it's dogs, like you see them, you love them because they're, Trish drew them so cute. And then you just hope that they're okay. You know, like you see those dogs and you immediately want them to, you know, you want to pet them. You want to cuddle with them.
And I agree. The artwork is fantastic. It just, it pulls you into the comfort zone. There was a book that Kaylin Smith drew. It was called Hope. Came out of year or two ago, and it was very much kind of the same vibe. It was very dark book, but this light, fun, cartoony kind of style, and it just kind of like puts you in this comfort zone, and then it's like it just gets real dark and it wakes you up, and then you almost don't even see the cuteness after that because you're waiting for something. It is drawn cute, but you're like, you're thinking like, okay, what else is going to happen? And it keeps you on edge. And you know, you read a Superman book and the Avengers, and they have stories that continue and go, but this is one of the first books in a long time that's kept me like in suspense, where I'm like, I need this next issue. I get excited for Avengers, the next book, because it's a good story and I want to read it. But this book has that suspense that like pulls you in, and like, I'm like, why aren't all five issues out right now?
Right.
So
yeah, we worked really hard on that. On I mean, we wrote the story as a full story, but I wanted each chapter to be a different feeling and a different vibe, and I wanted each chapter to end real hard, you know, like yeah. I want every chapter to end where you're just like, well, where's the next one, you know. I tried to, like, I feel like Brian K. Vaughan's the best at that, and I tried to do like my best Brian K. Vaughan endings, you know, not like ripping him off, but like he's so good at, like, you get to that last page and you're just like, fuck,
yeah,
need
yeah.
more immediately.
Were there, what about challenges like drawing this? Was there anything that, like, in your head that, like, kind of like roadblocks or anything when you were drawing this? Or was it like, as soon as he pitched this, you knew what you were going to do and you just went like straight down?
Oh no. As soon as he pitched it to me, I was in from the start. Now, like, horror is not my genre. Like, I'm as far away from your classic horror fan as you can be. I know your big ones, you know, your Freddy Krueger's and
yeah.
you know, Jason, I know those, you know, your big ones, but I'm not into like obscure horror. But like, to me, this story was more like a psychological thriller until you get to issue 3. Mm-hmm. And then it totally flips the switch to horror.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the way the story is crafted, you got to the end and you're just like, what? Huh?
That was my reaction. Exactly.
And then you turn that black page at the end and you're like, the heck? Like, why?
Yeah.
There's pictures yeah. of dogs.
You needed the palate cleanser at the end. Mm-hmm. But I had so much wine after that. It was so much wine. But that part of the story is very, very pivotal and necessary. We've gotten a lot of feedback. A lot of people are like, how could you? You are horrifying. When's the next one coming?
Yeah. Yeah. That's I mean, that was my vibe on it, because I'm not a horror person either. Like, every October when they start playing horror movies on TV and I just catch the commercial, till probably Christmas time, I'm in the shower peeking behind the curtain every 5 seconds. My wife's like, why do you even have a knife in the shower? I'm like, in case I get attacked.
You don't know.
Be too safe. As far as like designs though, like when we first talked about the story, Trish landed on what the designs of the characters were real fast. You know,
I
like
think it was only like 2 or 3 weeks maybe of pitching characters back and forth. You know, you want your tropes, you want your you know, your hero and your heroine, you want your tropes, and then you want your background kind of less involved, but still personality driven. Don't know. They all had personality as soon as they came out. I don't know where they came from. It was like, I don't know. Inspiration hit.
But that's what all of Trish's artwork is. And that's one of the reasons why I went to her and why I hoped that she would do the project, is just because when she draws, like, even if she draws My Little Pony or licensed characters, chipmunks or whatever, like, they always have personality, and it's always more than the regular personality that they have. You know, like, when she draws My Little Pony, you can tell that they have more personality than the ones in the show, just because of how much she's putting into it. Yeah. So, like, even on, like, the first pass on these dog designs, you could see that, like, what this character would sound like or what they would care about or, what, you know, like, how they acted.
I don't think the designs actually really changed too much from the originals. I think, you know, we wanted like Gucci to appear a certain way. Gucci is the Chinese crested kind of weird looking dog.
With the little like
with the little mustache.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, we wanted her to be a certain way, and her attitude's kind of like, you know, reflective of that, even though she's kind of weird looking, she's still kind of a diva.
Yeah.
You know,
Sophie, like I think you got Sophie right off on the first try. Rusty, we went back and forth a couple of times.
I think Earl, more we color for him.
Times. Mm-hmm. But yeah, most of them were just, that's good. That looks great.
Did you try to put certain personalities with certain breeds that have been like, I hate to use the word tropey again, like, yeah, but I mean, you know, because like everybody always thinks of like the Scottish Terrier style, like, like as like a douche kind of, or or like the bulldog is kind of like the meathead moron guy. Like, so did you Did you specifically go, all right, I'm envisioning this breed of dog with this character, or did you just kind of let Trish kind of go nuts after like with it and just be like, what do you think?
We had so many dogs that we could sort of go a bunch of different ways. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes we would go against type. Sometimes we would go right for a type, you know, like I want this to be very specifically this, you know, like Rusty is like the alpha leader dog and he looks like the lead dog in a cartoon about dogs, you know? And same with Sophie, you know, like she's the final girl. She's like the horror movie girl. Mm-hmm. And she's just like this cute little blonde dog, you know? So like a lot of times we leaned into it, but sometimes we, you know, like we went the other way. Like there's a poodle who's not like your big feminine, like diva character, is just like a regular dude. And so sometimes we would go again. Sometimes we would lean into it. It was a lot of dogs to sort of to try a bunch of different things on.
And we got to, you know, kind of place our own dogs in there a little bit, like,
yeah,
you know, personalities, like, you know, Roxanne is the Malamute. She's very pretty and fluffy, you know.
Nurturing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very pack oriented animal. You know, then you've got Killer and Aldo, the buddies. You know, I like them. I like drawing them together. They're really cool.
I think that's what gives those last pages a lot of power too, is because you did capture personalities in each one of these dogs. And that's very much what it's like in real life. You get a dog and their personality shines through almost instantly, whether they're shy or playful or, you know, whatever. So you connect with them so quick because of that, because it feels like a real dog that you're getting. So then it really makes those last pages just kind of like, bam.
Hits you straight in the heart.
It does, especially the third one. How could you?
We were accused of cheating. Remember that one?
Yeah, a reviewer this week came on and said that if you're just cheating, people only love these characters because they're dogs.
Yeah, if they were actual like people, no one would care.
Well, Chris Moreno in our chat said if it was My Little Ponies, they would have solved the mystery straight out of the gate, one and done.
It'd have been one prestige book, and that's it.
Yeah, they got magic. They got
done.
Yeah,
there's a really crazy a part of the chat where we've now gone into the part where the sequel should be called Paw and Order Special Victims Unit.
Not SVU. Gross.
Well, SLU. It's SLU.
Yeah.
And like a ponies version, and just a bunch of other stuff. I recognize a lot of those names. That's really cool that some of those guys are hanging out with us tonight in the chat. So
I was just talking, I went to a store today to sign some books, and a buddy of mine invited me over to watch them do their orders. It was like very educational, you know, like what stores are looking for, and sort of was helpful as a creator. But they were talking about doing a sequel to Stray Dogs, and I had to tell them, like, because we sold the property to Paramount like before the book even came out. Like it's in development as like an animated horror movie.
Oh, awesome.
But when they bought it,
if they do it.
Yeah, we got our fingers and toes crossed. But when they bought it, they also stipulated in the contract that they also own, like, if we did the same thing with cats, they own that, or with rabbits or whatever, you know, like Stray, anything else where they're the captives of a murderer, they own all that. So now it's a matter of like, if I wanted to do another one, like if we wanted to do another one, figuring out how to own it ourselves and not have it just not just give free stuff to Paramount. That's, you know, high level discussions, stuff to figure out.
We could do a one book one-off where it's the same story, but the serial killer is a cat and the cat doesn't care.
It is a cat. The cat goes from owner to owner, and she keeps going, moving from
house. Yeah, the killer is the cat.
Well, I mean, cats don't have any kind of remorse. So yes, I would totally, I'd buy that book. I think that
they would eat your soul, then they would just slit your throat while you slept and then eat you.
Yeah. I won't do it if it's snakes.
Yeah, that too. I won't do that either.
So. I don't even think Trish could make those cute.
What, snakes?
Yeah.
I can make a cute snake.
Probably. You think so? All right. Challenge accepted.
She's like, hold on, while you guys talk, I'm going to draw this really cute snake.
Hold my beer. Where's my paper? I don't think I have much paper, but man. I will make this happen. Hold on.
Oh man,
here you guys go. Keep talking.
I don't think you can do it.
Oh, well, you don't?
I've told a lot of people.
I have full and total belief in you, Trish. Go for it. Go for
it. All right, hang on. I got a pen and a line paper. This is the least professional thing I've ever done.
That's how the first Stray Dog sketches were. They were all on line paper.
That's Trish right. Do and little notes by, at work. 3x3 notepads. I have a day job, like a nerd. You know, I go to my day job. And, of course, you know, while I'm taking phone calls or whatever, I'm doodling on a 3x3 notepad. And I sent him a picture. He's like, is that 3x3? Like post-it note? What the hell? Yes. Don't
judge. Don't judge.
Eventually when we do the big Stray Dogs, you know, like super hardcover thing, it'll be all, the back of it will look like a Chip Kid book. It's just like notepaper and a photograph of a napkin that she drew on. Yeah.
I've told a lot of people about this book after reading it. But there's somebody had mentioned, I guess you have a Kickstarter. Is there any, like, what other projects do you have coming up in mind? Anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, we were talking in the beginning. John had mentioned this book I did called Time Shopper that was supposed to be an Action Lab book, and it sort of got COVID-ed. It was going to come out in February of last year, I think. It's way delayed. It's been finished forever, but Action Lab had issues and they just gave us the rights back, and we're going to kickstart it basically right after the last Stray Dogs comes out.
Oh, cool.
So I'm not doing two things at once, but it's a story about a guy that gets hired to travel in time and sort of fix history's greatest disasters, you know, like kill baby Hitler or warn the Titanic about the iceberg or warn JFK. And as soon as he gets back in time, before he can do what he's supposed to do, he gets just distracted by how cheap everything is. And so he just ends up mostly shopping in time. And then hilarity ensues, you know, like he gets in trouble and they send, you know, Terminators after him to chase him down. And that's going to be like a European format hardcover, like a 9x12.
Yeah.
Hardcover.
Like 4A or A4 or whatever, or A.
Yeah. The European paper
size. A5, whatever it is.
And the team is the Time Shopper or the Stray Dogs team, just minus Trish. So not as good. but with my friend Christian Misi, who's this caricature artist. So he does this really cool.
Boom. Look at that. Cute snakes.
All right. I'd hug that snake. You win.
But yeah, that'll be in June. That'll come out, or the Kickstarter will come out. And we're doing a cool, like, additional, like, add-on stuff on Kickstarters. I always think is sort of dicey. But we're trying to do a cool thing where, since he's going shopping in time, if you do add-ons on this, you can get stuff like a shopping bag, basically, of stuff that he brought back from time. So, like,
oh, nice.
You know, like a signed
picture. Where's my power gloves? Where's my power glove?
Yeah. Stuff like that.
My real working power glove. That's what I want.
So. I feel like that would price us out.
That's like the $5,000 tier.
Yeah. Yeah. You see those people that mod their power gloves? Like they make power gloves and they can use them for like short key, like hot keys on their computers.
Yep.
Very wild.
I liked the mat myself personally.
The power pad?
The power pad. Yeah, the power pad.
Not me, man. I was a fat kid. I'm not getting on that thing.
Oh no! We would do like the Olympics one, and it was like the long jump, and you jump off onto the bed.
Like, oh yeah,
jump like 4,000 feet. Well, is there a link? Is it set up right now? The Kickstarter?
It's not set up yet. But if you go to timeshoppercomic.com, or it might just be timeshopper.com. That seems like it would have been an expensive URL.
Because I want to make sure I get that posted in the comments for everybody and then put on our Facebook page. Because
timeshoppercomic.com, we've got an email list. Or if you just go to straydogscomic.com, we've got an email list there too. And either of those, I'll be spamming all those people when that goes out.
Okay. Wow,
the chat is fully loaded with Team Trish for that snake right now. Just it's all hashtag Team Trish.
Cute snakes. So.
Carl said, who gets the original sketch signed and framed?
Oh, my God. Of the cute snake?
Yeah.
Ooh. I mean, we could get that. I'm just giving away Trish's art now. Whoever buys all five Stray Dogs from your shops, you could raffle that shit off for sure.
Okay.
I can dress it up a little bit, sign it, and
Stray Snakes.
Stray Snakes.
Stray Snakes. That's my nightmare.
Snakey. My little snakey.
I don't care how cute they are. Stray Snakes.
Yep. Nope. I feel like if you're good.
Plural. If you're a serial killer killing people who own snakes, you're just sort of doing a service, you know, like.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to try and find that guy.
I'm like Indiana Jones with like out all the cool adventures and money and good looks and smarts. I just hate snakes.
The fear. So.
Yes.
The phobias. Yes.
Yeah.
It had to be snakes.
Yeah. Or rats.
That would be the issue one. That would be the issue one title. It had to be snakes.
Yeah. That could just be the title of the book.
Why did it have to be snakes?
Why did it have to be snakes?
Now, we've talked with a couple artists in the last couple months, and this is something that I never thought to ask, but if you're in the comic industry, then you probably enjoy comic books. What's it like being a creator and trying to catch up on the things that you want to read? Do you get a big backlog? Do you try to limit yourself or...
Yeah.
I have a backlog. I'm trying to see. I'm a relative newcomer to this whole comic book thing and this collecting thing. So I've got, you know, like your Shadecraft. I read the first one, but I haven't read the second one yet.
It's good.
Yeah. And of course, you know, Joe Henderson said nice things about our book. Plus, you know, he worked on Lucifer. So he's my best friend.
Oh, good.
He's not my best friend. But
you want him to be, though.
Yes. Yeah.
He will be after con season next year. Come on.
But like I picked up a lot of indie books. I'm not so much into the big superheroes or even the like troubled superheroes. There's a lot of that out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I've been picking up like Noctera, you know, your the newer indie stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't really gotten a lot of time to read. I did pick up Berserker, and you know, I'm a big Keanu Reeves fan, so whatever.
The second Berserker come out yet?
Yeah.
Yes. I think isn't that already in its like fourth printing or whatever?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, for the love of all that is holy, there's so many covers.
Yeah. Try working at the shop and having to price those. It's like we got third prints of the first one. That's like a foil third print.
Mm-hmm.
Like $200 on eBay. I'm like, I just want people to be able to read the book. I don't want to, you know. Like,
I don't like foil covers. I've noticed this about myself, unless it's like spot foil and it's like bright.
Yep.
Because most foil covers look really washed out.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And all you see is the shine.
Yeah. It's like silver instead of white that they're printing on, right?
Yeah. And it's like, guys, can we do a white hit on this, then do something? Like, oh my gosh.
No. Yeah.
Back in my day, we had chromium. That's what you really want.
I think, Boom last year for free or for local comic shop day did a lot of like that goldish foil.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, they bronzy. Did. And it looked really good. Like the Dune book. The Power Rangers book, like a lot of them looked really, really good like that. So,
and I have found myself picking up a lot of blanks. Like my personal stash of blanks is getting unmanageable. I'm going to actually have to draw on them you know, at some point.
So when you go to shows, are you going to take some of those and then just do whatever people want? Cool. Yep. I will try to find you and have
I think I've got them. Like, I know I've got a stack like this of My Little Pony blanks, just huge. Just,
yeah.
I found them on eBay. There was a shop in New Jersey that had like boxes of them. And I said, how many can I buy? He said, as many as you want. I said, give me 100 of them. I have 100.
Was it Jetpack?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a good deal
with those guys.
I got a real good deal. One BronyCon. It was all different covers too. They were all different issues.
And yeah, I remember I bought like 500 from them one time and just sort of like would take them to shows over and over again and just sell them.
Mm-hmm. And people love them. I mean, I've gotten more and more into, like, I work a lot digitally and I'm very non-committal. So I've been trying hard to really get physical media going. I have, you know, covers that I've done, like ink and pen, and I've got the Copics and all that good stuff, the good stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm just, I lack commitment when it comes to like,
it's weird putting not a having tape a... on him.
I don't have control Z. I can't get rid. I'm like, oh, what's happening here? No.
I've been going back and forth between digital and traditional a lot lately. Like the Rick and Morty series that I just did was all digital on my iPad, and the last My Little Pony stuff I did was all digital. But then My Little Pony Transformers, like I know there's an aftermarket for that. So I was like, well, I'll draw that on paper, but I still lay it out the same. So I have drawn all these little tiny ponies for me to draw. And also because the scale of like a pony with a giant robot is like, your pony has to be like that big for it to, you know, like here's the robot's hand.
Yeah.
And so if I'm doing it digital, I can just zoom way in and draw the pony and it looks fine. But if on paper, like I have to really, like my eyes are not good anymore, I discovered, because it's just like, I can hardly even see where I'm supposed to put these details.
It just means you need a bigger piece of paper.
Yeah, do like a Will Eisner where it's like the size of my kitchen table.
And... That'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been my problem, but I don't have anything big enough that I could like print. Like I'd have to take it to a shop if I were to like lay out digital and then go. Mm-hmm. But I did a 10 pager for My Little Pony Transformers 2. And I got to draw a cowboy robot, and he's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's so over the top. I love it.
That's awesome.
My one coworker, Chip, is a huge Transformers fan. So I think he's working or just finishing up. So he'll really enjoy watching this and getting
to tell you the colorist made my lines on this robot look so good.
Yeah.
I saw the PDF of it recently before they send it to print, and you know we kind of give it a once over just to make sure all the colors are right and everything. And man, that colorist did a hell of a job. I don't know. I like to think that sometimes the colorist can be the savior of, you know, what I think is a horrible set of lines, and you know they really did a good job and. Props to them, colorists. You guys
never do horrible lines.
Well, I always like, think that like colorists and letterers are like the two unsung heroes of comic books. So
Tony does all the letters for this.
That's true.
Nice.
I'm doing all the colors on my Transformers ponies thing, and as I'm drawing it, I'm like cursing myself in advance because normally I'll just do all sorts of details and little tiny stuff, and then just send it off to somebody and not have it be my problem anymore. And this time I'm just like, well, I'm just sending this to myself. This is going to be awful. Like, this is going to take forever. Why do these Transformers have so many parts?
Why did I do this to myself?
What's that process like since you do lettering? Because I don't think we've talked with anybody that's done lettering before.
Yes, we have.
So have we?
Yeah, we talked to Justin Birch, who's done a lot of stuff. So
I'm not... I'm interested how that works. Like, do you do a lot of it by hand, or does it depend on like?
I do it in it's all in Illustrator, but I drew the balloons by hand. Like, if you look in Stray Dogs, like the balloons are sort of rough and look a little more natural. I tried to make them look organic so that they would sort of fit with the story. I basically just do it when I write stuff because I want to have control over it until the very last second, you know, as far as just like making changes.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of like guilt and shame where if I was working with somebody else, I would feel so bad about saying like, hey, can you add another dot to this ellipses? Or can you take, you know, like just little stuff that wouldn't matter to somebody else. But if it's me doing it, I can just open up my program and make a quick change. And then it's, you know, it doesn't hurt anybody, but
yeah.
But because I came in comics doing a little bit of everything, like I know how to letter, and also it saves us that cost, you know, as a doing a creative own book, like we got to pay for everything up front. And so that's just sort of a way for us to save that, you know, whatever, $30 a page or $40 a page.
Well, I love it. I'm excited for the last two issues, but also nervous for the last two issues. and I'm looking forward to, you know, this, whatever you guys have coming up down the pipeline, because I feel like this might be like your breakout thing. That's how good this book is. I really enjoy it. So,
yeah, thank you. We have a free comic book day issue coming out. That's the first issue, and then it also has 10 new pages, like a prologue.
Yeah.
And that'll come out a month before the trade. So, you know, you're a retailer, you know, you can sell a bunch of trades by giving out that first issue for free.
Yeah.
And then in the wintertime, towards the end of the year, we're going to do a small follow-up that I've been describing as sort of like, you remember in Disney when they would do direct to VHS sequels where it would be like
Beauty like and the Aladdin Beast. 2.
Yeah. This, well, Aladdin 2 was like a sequel, but Beauty and the Beast was like, this just happened at Christmas time during the movie, yeah, Beauty and the Beast, you know, like, because the way Stray Dogs has an ending, you know, like there's not really a sequel to Stray Dogs because the story is a finished story, but we can tell you more about these dogs and sort of grow the world a little bit by doing some sort of like Lion King 1.5 type stuff.
Yeah.
Nice.
Right in the middle. So that'll be towards the end of the year. It's going to be called Stray Dogs Dog Days. And oh, sort cool. of like each dog gets a short story to sort of focus on them and fill it out a little more.
I think you just made a That's bunch awesome. Of people happy that are excited about this.
We book. Feel so bad about it because, you know, like for us, this 5 issues has been like a giant mountain to climb, you know, but everybody else is like, you're only doing 5 issues.
I'm just like,
it's so hard.
Yeah.
What's wrong with it? Why would you want that many issues of dogs just being
exactly
being miserable?
Right.
Poor dogs.
No, but it is one of those things. It's like, I'm a huge dog lover and I find it just very weird that I'm like, oh, I love this. I want to read it. Cause I'm like, no, please, no, don't.
But like, you know, we're dog lovers too. And aside from the dogs being in danger, it's also like very dog focused, you know, like if this is just about these dogs, you're basically like, it's told from the perspective of like, you're a 12th dog in that house, you know, like they're with them. So I feel like people that are very close with dogs get into it even more because you're just right there on the ground with them.
Well, yeah, because those people like myself and I'm sure and you guys, I'm sure, like those are like family members, you know. So it's almost when you're reading this, if they feel like people, like we talked about catching all, you know, those personalities and stuff. So
I've had my Malamute since she was 8 weeks old. She is my child. That is my princess. And so, of course, she acts like a princess. But, you know, the personalities, it just brings us all the way back around to the beginning. That's what drew me in, is that I could draw these kind of personalities and that people would love them and get as attached to them as I am. I'm very protective of these characters. Like, no one else can draw them, but please draw them. You know?
The dog's like my troubled brother that I have to sort of look after and make sure that he doesn't hump the neighbor and stuff. You know, just like I got to keep an eye on him, otherwise he won't survive.
Yeah, mine is now. My boy is now laying beside me, licking his leg. Calm down, buddy.
You're talking about dogs getting all disturbed.
He's 15, so.
Aww.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah, and his sister is 16, and she acts like she's 2. Right, Boston Terriers, man, they last forever.
Who are you feeding these dogs?
My wife and I just feed them love. That's all.
Yes.
We don't have any kids. We just have fur children. So, but we need to review some books real quick.
Let's do it
because we are really running. We're running a little over tonight. Let's go. This is, but honestly, we don't mind running over because it's been a great conversation, and I
love it.
And the reason I actually did miss issue 2 and 3 was because when I got 1, it was like real late. And then 2 had come out and we were already sold out before I could get it. And I forgot about it by the time 3 came out. Oh. And then I was like, I'm just going to get the trade. And then I'm like, it comes out in September. Like,
how could you do this?
But I'm definitely going to get that. And I will probably bring my issue 1 around to you guys when cons start up. That reminds me, like, Tony, where are you at? Like, what's some of your local shops? Cause, I know we asked Trish, but
yeah, I'm in LA. My local shops, Collector's Paradise is my closest shop. And I do a bunch of, like, we do a signature series with them where they sell like all 5 issues of Stray Dogs in a pack that comes all signed and ready to go.
That's awesome.
And then House of Secrets is like my regular every week Wednesday shop. That's in Burbank.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, you can get Sketched On covers from or you could get sketched on covers from Collector's Paradise.
I did all those my homework. I did all my homework.
I have a pile of those I got to do. Awesome. But yeah, I don't have any. I mean, LA is like a paradise for comic book nerds, because if you're looking for a specific comic, there's like a shop every mile and a half or so, you know? And so, like, I remember a year or so ago, I was just like, oh, I want to get all of the classic X-Men that had those backup stories. And so then I was just like, well, I'll just go drive around until I find them all. And sure enough, you know, like I just found them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh, great. For being a much smaller than LA, actually has something like 13 or 15 comic shops within like, within like an hour and a half of this, if from the center of the city where the three rivers meet, you could drive an hour and a half in any direction. And in that circle, it would, there's like probably 15 shops, different ones. That's not counting like gaming shops too, because there's gaming shops too, but like comic shops, there's a ton of them. It's nuts. And we have, you know, half of that, but but we're friendly with everybody and everybody's cool. Like, and we help each other out. Like I've helped out other stores and they've helped us out with stuff. So it's great. Being able to be in that big nerd fraternity.
Stray Dogs 2 and 3 are in second printing. You can still get them from Diamond. I mean, you work at a store. You could
Right.
We have second print of 2. I think we just got, was that last week? I think.
Not
that
2 came in a couple weeks ago and 3 comes out the week after 4.
Okay. Yeah. I know some of the stores were getting them in because I happened to hop on Comic Hub today and look, because all of our stores are Comic Hub stores. And it was like, I don't want to drive like an hour and 20 minutes to get a 2 and 3 just for today, because that's one way. Like, I don't want to drive 2.5 hours just to pick that up.
To do this show at 9.
Well, had I remembered yesterday, it would have been only a 1/2 hour drive from the one store that I was at, or I would have just picked them up there. But that was totally my bad.
You can also message us after this. We have
PDFs.
Nah, I'll find the physicals.
You got the hookup.
It's the thing, man. I gotta have the physicals. Like I'm
the same.
I don't like digital.
It blows my mind seeing it like in my hands, like picking it up and thumbing through it. It blows my mind.
Oh, that has to feel great.
It's so weird seeing my work in print and then seeing, you know, it's just
even just off. Like, you know, like when we draw them, we're drawing them one page at a time. And so when, like, back when I was writing it, I thought about like how the pages would face each other. But then it's been so long since then that like to see them, the pages and spreads facing each other is like a whole nother, like it's a different experience than what we've been looking at on the screen all this time, putting the book together. It's very
sometimes
bizarre.
You look at it and you're like, oh, this page didn't line up the way I thought. And then you flip the page. You're like, oh, this was awesome. I'm glad I did this.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's very, very cool. All right. Let's talk some reviews real quick, Tim.
I make them quick.
Cool. Me too. You want to go first?
Yeah, you can do first. I'll do mine first, yeah. Because I did Heroes Reborn. That came out this week, and it was awesome.
Okay. Well, that's your first book. So go to town, my friend.
I was a little confused when I first read it because the issue 45 of Avengers I thought was going to be like the setup for Heroes Reborn, but this opens up like there's a mystery. Blade's the only person that remembers what the world is like. Everything is centered around that the Avengers were never formed. And there's a lot of just really good splash pages by Ed McGuinness in this. And really cool mashups of characters like Silver Witch, which is a cross up of Scarlet Witch. And then when her brother died, she absorbed his powers. You see a Doctor Doom that has the gem of Sidorak, or however you say it, and becomes Dr. Juggernaut.
Yeah, hold on. I found that.
Yeah, and it's insane. Like, he has Doom on his knuckles. Like, it's just a fun book. It's Jason Aaron is just continuing his trend from his Avengers series, where he was just doing big, bold, fantastic things and taking chances. And he's doing it again in this. And this is very much like what would it be like if Marvel could do DC's characters better than them? That's what this feels like to me. You've got, yes, so on the left, you've got your Superman, then you've got your Flash, your Wonder Woman, your Lantern, and your Batman, essentially. So
who's the Wonder Woman?
In the middle?
Yeah.
I don't remember what her name is.
Okay. Squadron Supreme lady?
Yeah, she's
from Squadron. Yeah, I was going to say, they're all Squadron Supreme,
right? Yeah. Yeah, they're all Squadron Supreme, and admittedly, I don't know too much about them. I always thought they were kind of lame because they seemed like DC knockoffs, and now I kind of like the idea of seeing if they can do those characters and do them better, because they are kind of lame. Like, Hyperion, his costume just drives me nuts. Like, you have like a wrestling belt sewed into your underpants, Captain Atom, you know, thing on your chest. I always thought his design was a little weird, but it was a really fun book. It's a lot of bold splash pages. I'm not going to give away the ending, but that's essentially what it is the Avengers never formed. And Blade is the only person that remembers what the world was like. And he's trying to figure out who put the world, made the world this way. So
Jason cool. Aaron is the best, because he does, like, when he does his grounded stuff, like his darker, you know, like Southern Bastards or Scalped or The Other Side, like, it's just so real and so, like, heart-wrenching and just like, ugh. And then he does superhero stuff and it's just like, this is crazy. Like, what if it was crazy? You know, like Wolverine and the X-Men was just bonkers all the time. It had like Frankensteins in it and stuff. Or what was the one he did where the orb killed the Watcher? Or the
Original Sin.
Original Sin, yeah, super crazy. They're just like, what if it was an event that was just bonkers the whole time?
Yeah.
Just silly stuff always happening. He's the best. I love that guy.
Yeah, I always enjoyed, I enjoyed Wolverine and the X-Men, and even now, like with all the X-Men stuff that's out, I go back and look at Wolverine and the X-Men, and there's so many elements in that series, like living on Krakoa and stuff like that, that they're using now. It's almost like they pitched this back then, but Marvel was still like scared to let them take a chance. And then Donny Cates was like, hey, what about this? And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, people like crazy, wild ideas. And they just let everybody just kind of go crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can tell Hickman must have really liked Wolverine and the X-Men a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. All right.
What do you got, John?
My first book is Marjorie Finnegan, Temporal Criminal, from Garth Ennis and the guys at AWA Studios. This book is crazy. So it's pretty much, think like, just literally think of like almost like a female Captain Jack, but a thief more than just like a weird time agent. And like, she has like this weird head that controls when she can go in and out of time. Her house is like in the middle of all of this temporal stuff. And she just robs things, and she has these weird time agent tools. And the one thing that is hilarious is called the Unfucker. And it unfucks moments. So there's one where like she slams like a shotgun into somebody's throat, and the Unfucker then puts like teleports him somewhere else, and it looks like he died from choking on like a date. And it's just so bizarre. And then at one point there's like a Nazi that built like a cannon, like a World War II cannon in like Viking times, and takes out a Viking ship and blows a hole through a Viking. And then you find out her sister is like a temporal sheriff. So she's like hunting her down. It is very Garth Ennis humor. It is very just all around ridiculous. She's also in love with David Bowie, which is awesome. So I'm very curious to see where the thievery happens more, and where all of the crazy fun heists will take us in that book. I just think it's going to be a grand time. So
Time Shopper Kickstarter launches June 20th.
Excellent.
Nice segue.
I was gonna say, like all of these time ones that people are just writing a bunch of time travel.
We're just real inspired by Garth Ennis's Marjorie Finnegan Temporal Criminal. You know, we wanted to do something in that vein. This is that.
Right. Well, I'm just wondering if like somebody leaked the idea to him at some point, but he said it was like his backer says something like it's like three different stories he had all put together. But as soon as I even heard about this book, I'm like, what was that other book that was supposed to be about time and stuff and something similar to that? And it was your book, but it had never come out. And that's why I was like, ah. I could be like Garth Ennis ripping you off, buddy.
I don't know. This sounds like Garth Ennis did a Dynamite book that my buddy drew called like A Train Called Love or A Train. It was like probably 5 years ago, but it's this kind of Garth Ennis where it's like the madcap, you know, like adventure.
Yeah.
You know, like people on a run, just moving real quick and getting off jokes and violence and stuff. Sounds good.
The tone of it reminds me of like Jimmy's Bastards that he did for Aftershock.
Yeah. Goran Sadzuka, really good at drawing.
Yes. Yes.
You guys are really good at reviewing books. I'm more like me, like Batman. Batman.
Batman.
Like that's me. That's me.
Like you get like real deep and you find these like these moments and these things in there. And I'm just like, Batarang. So I'll get better. I'll get better. I promise.
Lies. I mean.
I did Batman 108 because this whole story, Tinian and Jorge Jimenez, these guys are killing it. You know, this is a new world. I think we talked about this before after the detective where, you know, Bruce Wayne does not have all the assets that he once had. He now has a garage that he trains in. Somewhere through the city, and they have these little mini bat caves everywhere because everything's been destroyed and taken by the Joker. And you have these new criminals called the Unsanity Gang, I believe is what they were called. They want to give power back to the people. This book starts right where the last one left off, where Batman wants to find out more about this group. He brings back a classic character, Matches Malone is back, mustache. Nice. And mustache and all. And he meets this character, Miracle Molly.
This is the first full appearance of her. That's all I know.
Yeah, it's the first full appearance. She's a really cool character. She's kind of reminds me a little bit of the Carly from the Falcon series that they just did, with like, you know, what her mission and stuff is. But this was basically Bruce Wayne trying to figure out what these guys are up to. The background story is that Scarecrow is, he is just torturing Gotham City in the wake of the Arkham massacre that happened, and he's not using fear toxin. He's trying to do traditional things because he feels like he can really, like, it means more to him now. If I can scare these people without using any kind of a drug or something, then I really am the scariest guy, and I control fear. And I kind of like that aspect. I thought it was really interesting, him trying to scare everybody without using anything but traditional methods. He follows people and leaves little scarecrows in their house, and they don't know how he got there. So the story is essentially Miracle Molly, Matches Malone. They're going over everything, what this group is like, and then she calls him out. She's like, you know, Batman, I don't know why you came here in the first place. And he's like, how did you know? So she seems like a very smart character, but it was also one of those books where there was a lot of dialogue, but not much happening in the story. So this one was a little bit slower for me than the previous issues. And I didn't like the Ghost Maker story at the end at all. So the artwork was really, has been really, it was like very, there was one panel in the Ghost Maker story where Ghost Maker's arm was like really distorted. So either the inker or the color missed something. And the art quality in that story was kind of like throwing me off, where I didn't want to really dive into it too much, which is sad because I think that that new character Ghost Maker is a really cool character. So
I think this is the first time we've seen matches since before the new 52, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, that's, it was like during the last time was that brief story right after Dick Grayson stopped being Batman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, cool. No, sounds good. Ryan and I were noticing how completely like pizzazz looking Miracle Molly looks. I was like,
yep.
Why all is that pizzazz from Gem and the Holograms being a that, Batman villain?
All so, that leopard print and wild makeup. Yep.
She got Zimbas on.
The neon green leopard print is really yep. what
there's a lot of time. There's a lot of neon in this, in Jorge Jimenez's artwork. It has like a Blade Runner kind of feel, like down in the slums and stuff. Nice. So
I don't know if you can see them, but I've got Gem and the Holograms Funko Pops up there.
Right. Oh, I do. I do.
There's Gem and Pizzazz. So when you awesome. Said Pizzazz, I was like, yeah.
I mean, I saw the the Kool-Aid Man and all of the Care Bears earlier, but I did not.
The Misfits, not we're notice those together. Ones. That's all. I'm
That's right. Saying. Misfits songs, songs are better anyway.
It's true. It's true. I have that entire run.
I wanted that movie
comics.
To be,
I love it.
I wanted that movie to be good.
We don't talk about that movie. Yet,
so. Nope. That, there was a movie? I mean,
yeah.
Never mind.
Very horrifyingly reviewed.
So, movie. All right.
I thought it could have been like Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah, that movie was awesome.
That movie,
the soundtrack to that movie is awesome.
Yeah. I have that soundtrack. It's so
I
awesome.
Think you can watch it on HBO right now. Just so you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, my last book is Eden One Shot from Colin Bunn, an Aftershock. This is a oversized prestige format one shot. And I really dug it because it's kind of like this weird Twilight Zone episode. This girl comes into a tattoo shop and gets a tattoo. She's like, I want a butterfly, but I don't want it to be anything that looks like a regular monarch. I want something cool, like something original. And he's like, all right, cool, I guess I'll do it. And she's like, no, I want you to do it freehand, just do it. And he's like, okay. So he does this really awesome butterfly, and everybody in the shop is like, she's really digging on you, why didn't you get her number? And he's like, I don't know. And apparently his wife and son may have passed away. They don't really say, I don't think they really say how they passed away, but they had passed away. And so the next time she comes in, she's like, I want an eagle this time, or a fox this time on my arm. And he's like, well, where'd the butterfly go? And she's like, oh, don't worry about it. He's like, but you had it removed. She's like, I still want this wolf or whatever fox thing. And she's like, okay. So he does that. And then they go out and have a drink and they go home and, you know, they do adult things. And then a couple days later, she shows up again after ghosting him for a bit. And she's like, I want you to do an eagle on my back. So he does a freehand eagle, but he's like, why are all your tattoos disappearing? This is weird. Why are you getting him removed? And she's like, I can't, you would never believe me if I told you, blah, blah, blah. So he follows her to this park, and after she gets the eagle tattoo, and she is like sitting there, and it like morphs out of her body and becomes a real animal. So then he's freaked out, you know, and he thinks to himself, this is weird. I don't know what's going on. So she comes in for another one, and he's like, all right, I'm going to do this other one for you. But he draws his wife and kid on her. And the people at the shop are like, why did you do that? You're fired. Whatever. You can't do that. So he follows her to the garden because she realizes it and she's like, you've just killed me. Like, and like all this craziness ensues, and the kid and the mom come out and they're just like blank slate. Like, she's like, they had to be simple creatures because they weren't going to have memories. Like, it wasn't like you were bringing them back. And it gets even really weird for like the last like three or four pages, but it is super cool and very creepy. But it's like that real big ass, like magazine size. Like, this is, I think, bigger than what you were talking about Time Shopper to be, right? So
June 20 something.
Yeah. Yeah. Spot on. No
beats. Yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
I like the Columbine story. That sounds like a good one.
Yeah, he's been putting out some really crazy good stuff, and Aftershock has been consistently very good for him as an outlet. Yeah. They've been good for a lot of people as a creative outlet. I really feel that of the indie publishers, they're like right under Image for me, like in content.
I thought they were calling those things one shocks. Did that say one shot or one
it
shot?
It does say one shot.
I know. Yeah, they missed the mark there.
Yeah. Man.
They are creating an opportunity. They are creating a young adult line too. I think it's called Rumble. And that's coming out soon too. I do like that publishers are doing the young adult in like that, not digest. Quite a full, it's not quite digest, but it's a little bigger. It's like that in between.
Yeah, I saw the Strange Academy trade today and they're printing those like almost digest size.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that. It's like a three-quarter trade. So I really, really thought those were good. So, and we're starting to move a lot of those things. So that's very cool. So, all right, those are our books for this week. Other than that, we were going to briefly talk about, so Marvel or Disney moved their release dates for Disney shows to Wednesday, or for Marvel shows to Wednesday. So they would release on Comic Book Day.
Comic Book Day.
And I thought that was really cool, right?
Yeah. Smart move.
How did they do that? I like how they
announced it. I like right.
Like, we don't have enough stuff to talk to people on New Comic Book Day.
Like, plus, if you work at a comic shop, that means you're going to be up at midnight on a Tuesday, and then you got to go in and work on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
And New Comic Wednesday is madness, so enjoy that.
Yeah.
Right.
But you better watch it.
Well, that'll be great because we were always doing like on Thursday the episode from last week. And it's like, you know, right. By that time it's been talked about to death because these YouTubers, man, they're on it. They'll stay up all night.
I'm horrible with them. Like, I didn't watch WandaVision until all but like one episode was out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm horrible.
I at least give people like when it was coming out on Friday, I'd at least give people till Monday unless they were like, so did you see it? And then we're like, yeah. And then we'd be like off in the corner, you know?
Yeah. You have to do it all secret. Like,
right.
I really like it. Like, me and my brother have like a weekly call now where we can, where we'll get caught up on whatever the thing is. And it didn't used to happen when they were just putting out a whole season. You know, like when Netflix just puts a whole season out, you just talk about it one time, but me and my brother talk on the phone every week now. We didn't used to do that. That's great.
Right. Yeah.
And then like in between Marvel shows, we'll just like, so Mighty Ducks Game Changers, you up on that? And we're just like, yeah, that's pretty good. Abraman's back.
Well, right now it's Bad Batch. If you guys didn't watch that first episode. Well, and the
Mighty Ducks one is really good.
It is.
I was surprised at how good that was because I think the one girl was from Gilmore Girls and I'm not a big fan of hers. But yeah, they really captured the magic of
What was that? I need to fire you right now? Is that what you're saying? You're not a fan of Gilmore Girls. I don't think we can be friends anymore, Tim. This is Tim's last show, everybody.
Signing off.
If we're in the kitchen table laptop setup, you could see my Gilmore Girls box set in there. I love that show. But I think she's better on Gilmore Girls than she is on the Mighty Ducks.
Mm.
But that show's been fun. And I feel like they're building up to Pacey from Dawson's Creek showing up. I feel like if he's not the Luke Skywalker at the end of the season, I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah.
I really want him to show up, but it'd be his character from Fringe instead. Like that.
That'd be good. Like he ports in.
Yeah, or he like shows up with the cow, like, you know, like what was her name? Oh man, I can't remember. I just rewatched Fringe over the shutdown, so it'd be fun. I
wanted to show up like Pacey from Dawson's Creek and steal Lauren Graham away from Emilio Estevez.
That's that'd be funny. So I'm actually watching her husband's show again. I'm watching 6 Feet Under in full again. I just started season 2 yesterday. So, but anyway, it is way over. But we had a lot of fun, guys, and you guys have been great. And you are always welcome back. So when the trade comes out, if you want to talk, or you know, if you want to come back on for Time Chopper, cool with that.
I can come back too. I'm not on Time Chopper, but
you're close enough. You're close enough that we will talk
already.
Well, we will talk about getting you up for Three Rivers Comic Con for sure at some point, because that would be cool. And then Tony, if you're ever doing an East Coast tour or something, you want to stop by, you always have a home in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
We will hook you up, man. And there are a lot of bronies out here.
So. I haven't been to Pittsburgh since I was the long time ago. I went to a furry convention in Pittsburgh.
That Anthrocon.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
That's the biggest one in the country, is the one in Pittsburgh.
Actually, I think it might have been furries. Like 2002 or something, whatever.
Yeah. I keep hoping furries catch on to stray dogs, and every once in a while we'll get like little bites, you know, like, but I don't think it's broken in the furry community big. I feel like that's the whole secondary market. Because they're not anthropomorphic.
Like if they were like on their hind legs and they used their hands, we'd be rolling in furry money.
I just think it's cool that you can be animal control and still be considered a furry. Like, you're still part of the community. Yeah. Like, it's very, very
even
interesting.
Even though you're like a dog catcher.
Yeah. We have a lot of furries in shop in the store. They're really good people. So they get a lot bad rap, but they're really good people. So much like bronies. Bronies
like
get a bad
rap. Community, every community, every fandom has its dark corners that we don't talk about. And, you know, we just, like, as far as bronies are concerned, it's just a big party for those guys, you know? We just... You either have the bronies that are like, they want to talk to everybody, they want to get in your face, they want to say hello, they want to party and be happy, and then you got the ones that kind of hang out to the edges. And they don't talk to anybody, and you're just like, hi, all the way over there.
You know? It's like, did you read the My Little Phony book at all that came out, the one shot? It's like the old school bronies from like the 80s with like the mohawks and then like the newer guys, like where the mane goes all the way down the back. And that's actually something they do. And they're like, oh, you new school bronies aren't as cool as us old school bronies. And like, so there's like two groups of two, and the old school guys first get like the mohawks, and then the young guys get like the mane that goes all the way down the back. And then they decide, that they are going to become actual like part horse. So two of them, I think it's the old school guys get the horse heads and the other guys become centaurs basically. Right. And because they do that, they become the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and they bring on the apocalypse of the world, and they go to like the creator of My Little Pony's house, and she's being like eaten by a demon on the floor. They're like, which one was better? Which version is better? And she's just like, no, you need to go upstairs into my safe and watch the video. And like, and then she like dies from being eaten, and they go up there and they pop this VHS and it's actually about frogs originally. And they're like, oh, so should we go get pancakes? Like, what's going on?
Oh, and then like, it just ends like a handshake.
The spell is broken.
Yeah, but it was really, really funny, like how they were going back and forth as to which version was cooler. Because like, I grew up watching the classic stuff, because I would always watch He-Man, and then it would be on right after that. My sister would be like, oh, yeah, if I have to watch your show, you know. So that's why I liked Rainbow Bright and Jen and the Holograms and all those things. And, you know, I never really quite got into the newer stuff, but I liked how things got a little more licensed. Like, I liked that there was Dr. Hooves. Like, I bought a Dr. Hooves because I thought that was cool. I had to buy the ninth, no, 10th Doctor one, like the David Tennant one, because that's the only one that matters. And but there was some really, like, super dark looking My Little Pony things that have come out in the last couple of years that I thought were, I was like, man, this is crazy. And then
they tried like a really like brief run at like adult collectibles, like statues and and they've got a whole line of like anime figures now, like there's anime figures with the little cute ponies on them. I mean, oh my gosh, the things that have come out for grown-ups because of this brony movement, oh my gosh.
I love it. I think it's cool though, you know. I think it's awesome. Like any kind of fandom that can get that big is cool.
I mean, BronyCon was the biggest, and you know, 10,000 bronies in one place, just man, like it just makes me remember like why I did BronyCon. Because when you do BronyCon or when you do a brony convention and you're a me person who draws cute things and that's all you're known for, you know, you're a big fish in a small pond there or whatever. And then you go to a regular Comic-Con and you are no one and you are in the back and no one's coming to you unless they got a little kid and they're like, oh my God, you know, right next to you, there's some guy selling, you know, superhero prints and you're there with your little, my little kiosk and my little sign that says like ponies.
Yeah.
You know, and the little girls or sometimes guys would come. And I'm their oasis in the middle of that. Small fish, huge pond, big difference.
Yeah, I always get, as someone who actually runs a convention, it always feels weird to me when it's, when I go to shows and I'm like, you see it set up differently every time. Like Baltimore does a great job of like that huge kid section, right? But then you go to New York and it's not quite that. It's just kind of split up a little bit. And what we try to do is we try to put heavy hitter talent throughout the room. So it kind of pulls people around. So you may end up by, you know, like Ron Friends or like Pat Olive or something who do our shows because they live in Pittsburgh and they have a big local fan base. Or you may end up by like someone who is their very first show ever. Right. But it's kind of a cool thing. Cause like people are always, they have to look around and they have to walk around and, everybody always, the first time they ever do our shows, they're always like, oh man, I'm kind of in the back and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, trust me, I put this guy here. People are going to go for that guy. That guy just did Deadpool. They're going to be over there. Like you're going to have people walk by you. It's up to you to actually just do what you need to do. And you know, at the end of the show, they come back. Yell, come yeah. Back. Yeah. Don't just sit there and draw, like actually talk to people. And I'm like, if you can engage people, you're going to do fine here. And every one of them at the end of every single show is like, oh my God, you were so right. So, and, you know, we just try to do what we can and have a lot of fun. Our shows are like, our show is very much like Baltimore because it's very comic focused. So,
I think Baltimore Comic Con only really recently started getting into having the entertainment like folk come, like the TV show people. That's how I got to meet Haley Atwell.
They've been doing more than two of them per show for like the last 5 or 6 years, but for a long time it was just two. So and they held that pretty quick. And we have yet to have a TV movie star really. We're holding out for like Michael Keaton to be like, I'm going home to see my family, or Ming-Na Wen to be YouTube like
stars. That's it.
Someone told me I should go find Ming-Na Wen's parents. Cause they have a Chinese restaurant in downtown. Mm-hmm. And be like, if we get you to cater our party, like our after party, can you get your daughter to do our show?
I met her too at Baltimore Comic Con.
I was like, okay, but only if I can talk to her about ER. Like that. Because that was my first introduction to her. That and Chun-Li, when she was Chun-Li in the terrible Street Fighter movie.
That sounds like a several year like project where first you just get catering from her parents and don't even bring it up.
yeah
then build it up, bring them in, do like a your creator dinner at their restaurant too, you know, put a lot of money into that restaurant, make good friends with them. Then year three, that's when you spring it on them.
Right. we'll see what we can do. I'm sure she comes back to visit them, so we'll see.
I really appreciate you guys coming on. Thanks for answering my my messages. So
yeah, of course. Sorry, we scrolled. We went like a half hour over.
Nah, it's all right.
Yeah. You're fine. It's always fun. So as long as it's not eating up, you know, your guys' time and you're not.
Tim,
like,
for you, we went 10 minutes over.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
I mean, I still got 25 minutes before Grey's Anatomy, so we're cool. So it's a finale tonight. So
Trish understands. You just had surgery, right?
Yep.
I'm about to have surgery. I had an MRI, and they were very slow. Aww. It was 4:15, and I got out of there at 6:30.
Holy cow. Yeah.
Did they give you headphones at least, or did you, were you just in there?
No, I sat in the waiting room forever. I'm like, and then it took like 20 minutes to do the MRI. I'm like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, you spend more time in the waiting room than you do in having the actual thing done.
Yeah.
I was fortunate. Nothing, I didn't really have to wait too long for anything other than the period in between the appointments was really long.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm on the mend. Things will be looking up here in a couple of weeks and awesome. Be back to normal.
Well, thanks for putting up for my lateness.
Oh, you guys are fine.
No excuses, totally fine. Tim.
Oh no.
Just kidding.
No surgery.
I mean, you at least told me like 3 days prior that this was going to happen. Had you just told me today, I'd have been like, really, yeah. Man?
I was like, oh man, I got the timing down perfect. I got this.
Yeah. No, you're good. You're good. Yeah. So. But I also thank you guys for coming on. Yeah. Your great guests. And
thank you for pushing our book. Tim, thank you for reading it, John.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will catch up.
John, you got homework.
I do. I said I read one. I got to get the other two. That's all. I should have by the end of the weekend. So
I got the link for the Kickstarter up, and I'm going to put that on our Facebook page. And
I appreciate it.
We've got like 4,500 people that follow us on Facebook on just the one store, so the word will get out there for sure. So, yeah.
Well, we'll talk to you too about getting some for the stores after we get them out, because we're going to get some. We're not doing like a retailer tier, but we're going to work with retailers afterwards to just make sure you can sell it.
Yeah, perfect. So
that's awesome. So cool. Well, thank you so much, guys.
Thanks guys. Great for watching.
And we will catch everybody next week, same time, same YouTube channel. Have a great night.
Good night. See you guys.